This episode is brought to you by Hill's Pet Nutrition. Every shelter pet deserves a second chance, and you're making it possible for thousands of them every day. Because when you feed your pet Hill's, you help feed a shelter pet, which helps make them healthy, happy, and more adoptable, changing their life forever. So they can change yours. Over 14 million shelter pets fed and adopted. Science did that. Visit hillspet.com/podcast to learn more.
All right, we ready?
Yeah, I'm good.
All right. I haven't thought about how I was going to kick this off.
Yeah, what is it called even?
This is called the Dairy Connection Podcast. Well, I think I'm going to call it Dairy Connection, colon, a Stephen King podcast.
Oh, that's good.
For the SEO.
Yeah.
Did you know there are other worlds in these where they all float or get a bad disease? Let's all go to Castle Rock. We can hitch a ride with Christine. It's $6.99.
So let's talk about this. Let's talk about what's happening here. Chris literally just shuddered as I said that. I mean, Chris's body is rejecting the podcast. Uh-huh. Right, because it's so exciting. Also, we should mention right before we started doing this, we blew out an outlet, which was very spooky.
Oh, that is spooky. And there was smoke.
Yeah.
Like a ghost, like the like the outlet's soul leaving its body.
Yeah. So I feel like.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Cool.
So anyway, so I am a lifelong Stephen King fan, and I have a website called dairyconnection.com where I attempt to track every single connection between every single Stephen King book that's ever existed. I don't think I'm anywhere close to having that, but I think I have more than anyone else does. I'm not sure.
Really?
I don't think anyone else is even trying to do this. Why would they?
There's got to be someone else, right?
There are like wikis and things where it's like collectively people are like, oh, I saw a connection between these. And on Stephen King's website, there's like a forum where people track connections.
Yeah.
But I think I'm the only individual trying to read every book and write down every connection. I also take submissions.
Wow.
So maybe after reading The Green Mile, you guys will have some.
That's very legit. You haven't said your name yet.
I'm Maya. So I've had this website for a while. I wanted to make a podcast. I'm here actually with three of my coworkers. We happen to work at a podcasting company. If you want to make a podcast just like this one, you can do it at anchor.fm. Let's introduce ourselves. So I'm Maya. I run the dairyconnection.com. Patrick.
I am Patrick.
Oh.
This is actually my first time on a podcast.
Really? Okay. Don't put it in quotes. podcast. Someday this is going to be the top podcast in the charts and you're going to be very embarrassed.
All right. Well, anyway, we're going to be talking about The Green Mile today.
Yeah.
And that is the second story I've read by Stephen King. The only other thing I've read is The Dark Tower.
His magnum opus.
Yes.
Yeah.
And I love that. And The Green Mile was also great. And yeah, that's
Excellent. Me. Great. Christopher.
I'm Christopher. I think I have read the least Stephen King of the group, but I've read The Shining and 11/22/63. Is that the right name?
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
And then this one, The Green Miles.
Oh, cool. Hi, my name is Brendan Bigley. I didn't read The Green Mile, so this is going to be fun. I'm just here for the shenanigans and the good times with friends.
You did read one part of it, right?
I read a couple pages.
You told me you read the whole first. You meant you were on the first part, not that you finished it.
Oh, yeah, I'm on the first part.
Okay, so Brendan has read two pages of
Green
Mile.
I went to Dee's Luncheonette in Hawthorne, New Jersey, and just appreciated the fun family vibe while reading about just the most horrific cell block in human history.
For two pages.
For a couple pages, yeah. So I have read a bunch of Stephen King, actually, more than I thought when you asked me this earlier today. It suddenly occurred to me. So I read Christine. That was my entry to the Stephen King world. Probably my favorite book still of his. I am totally obsessed with it. I've read it more than once.
And you never read books.
Yeah, I don't.
So that's saying a lot.
Well, I used to read a lot of books, and then I got stuck in this trap where I kept reading Lev Grossman's The Magicians repeatedly forever. And I have a curse, and I'm still waiting for it to be lifted. Anyway, I also read Under the Dome, which was fine, and I read Cell, which I hated.
Yeah, everyone did.
Yeah.
So you've read three and two pages.
Yeah.
Okay, great. I think people think that I have read every Stephen King book. I actually did the math. I think I've read 2/3 of them, so I'm still working my way through, but I think I've read way more Stephen King books than
How many is that?
Oh, God, I don't know. I think he has total... I want to say he has like 70-ish books and I've read like 45 of them. Wow. Or something. For a long time, it was all I read.
Yeah.
And I'm getting back into it now for this podcast. So we read The Green Mile for our book club. It's actually the second book we read. The first one we read was probably my favorite book of all time, which was not by Stephen King. It's called Children of Time, but that's a story for another day. Great book. All right. So I thought we could start with some book clubby questions and sort of, you know, get this thing moving, get us talking about the story. So let's start with, did everyone like the book besides Brendan? Who wouldn't know?
Yes.
Yeah, I thought it was pretty great.
I loved it. I actually just finished it last night and I sobbed for a very long time.
Really?
Yeah. Are you going to be upset if we talk about spoilers?
No, not at all. No, okay. Not at all. See, just consider me a passive observer. I hope that by the time I walk out of here, I feel like I read the book.
Yeah, I think you might.
That's my hope.
Yeah. So what really got me, I've seen the movie before. You've seen the movie a long time ago.
Yes, but I don't remember any of it other than some of the actors, and that's...
Okay. So most of us were... I saw it a few years ago, but you guys were kind of going in blind as well, right?
Yeah, I saw it a long time ago.
Yeah, so The Green Mile was already like one of the saddest movies I've ever seen. So when I started reading the book, I thought that I was going to be crying the whole time, and I was very proud of myself that I wasn't. And mm-hmm. then last night when they got to... Obviously, John Coffey's execution is very mm-hmm. sad.
Yeah.
But when they get to the part... So like the part about his wife dying really got to me because it was just like... It was this cool guy who did so much stuff and had like was so brave. And then it's like he got into the stuff about how this happens to all of us. And like that's what really broke me because it's like this old I can't do sad old people stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And it was like this sad old man talking about how like fruitless it all is.
Yeah.
And I cried a lot.
I also got very weepy towards the end.
Really?
Like definitely a bit during John Coffey's execution. Mm-hmm. But yeah, like the ending with Paul, whereas you said, like, it kind of explains that, like, the whole point of the story is that it's not just John Coffey suffering. Like, it's something that everyone goes through in life. Yeah, and it was pretty heartbreaking.
Yeah, very heartbreaking. I think, what about, I was sort of surprised by the, I told you this the other day, the graphic language in the novel. Because I don't remember. So the movie is pretty true to the book. I think you guys should watch it because it's like it's really cool how they stuck right to it. Like even the narration feels like you get a lot of backstory, which you don't always get in the movies. But I don't remember the movie having like that aggressive of like swearing and like gross like sexual innuendo and stuff. And
right.
Stephen King does tend to do that sometimes. Like he's really good at portraying evil characters. So sometimes he says really horrible things. But this book was sort of like nonstop that because you're in a prison with murderers. And they act just like real murderers.
Oh. Yeah.
And that they swear a lot.
Except for Del, I think. Like Del, yeah. I found him to be an interesting character because like he did horrible things, but he's very likable.
Lovable. Yeah.
Like it's almost like he seems very innocent when the mouse comes into the story.
Yeah. Yeah. That was the probably second saddest part for me of the book was like the whole like he's about to walk the Green Mile and all he cares about is his mouse being safe. And they talk about Mouse Town or whatever it's called. Mouseville.
Yeah. Mouseville.
So sad. Fun fact. So Stephen King writes a lot of his books in Maine, but he also writes, he sets things in other places where he's lived. So he lived in Colorado. That's why like The Shining is set in Colorado. And he has a few books that are set in Florida because he has a summer home in the Florida Keys. Duma Key is one of his books. One of my favorites. And so when they were talking about Mouseville or whatever it was called. I thought that was like a nice little nod to like the happiest place a mouse could be is in Florida. The Stephen King loves
weird.
It in Florida. Yeah. A lot of connections coming up. That's pretty, I don't know if that's a real one.
Are you telling me Disney World is in Dark Tower?
Yes.
Nice.
Is it, Pat?
You know, I don't remember it being. Like, it definitely has a lot of references to a lot of other.
Is Wizard of Oz
works.
Disney?
No.
Well, anyway, Pat just finished reading the Dark Tower, so I think you're the most expert person here.
Yeah, I guess you could say that.
Yeah, yeah. You'll remember.
I'm sure there's a lot of stuff that I don't remember because I read it very quickly. I read it over 6 months, I guess, end of last year, early this year.
Yeah.
But
well, I have one specific question for you coming up later, so
okay.
Stay tuned for that, Pat. Don't leave. All right, so I'm going to I have a lot of talking points here. I'm gonna start asking questions. So one that I feel like I was thinking of throughout the book was they make this really interesting choice to tell the story from the perspective of Paul when he's really old. In Paul's the main character, if you haven't read the book, in a nursing home, and so he's looking back on it. But it's not just a memoir; it's like interspersed with stories of his time in the nursing home. So what did you guys think about the decision to tell the story that way? What did that mean to you?
Well, I mean, like, I think the whole point of the nursing home is to compare Paul's life to life in the prison that he worked in. Which, I mean, he says himself, he compares him and the other residents to prisoners.
Yeah. Chris, what did you think?
At first, I guess it was jarring, but then the book has its own style, and then it seemed, made it more believable that he wrote the book, or wrote the story, which was kind of cool. It seemed, yeah, it seemed like he was kind of just telling a story, so.
Yeah. Yeah, I felt like it made it feel much more real. And I think, like I kind of mentioned before, I think it makes you, it forces you to see it. Like, I think people have a hard time seeing things from old people's perspective. Like, I think when you're young, you just sort of put it out of your mind. And I think he says this a few times where he's like, you think this isn't going to happen to you, but it happens to all of us. And it's one of the few stories I've seen that, like, forces you to see it from an old person's perspective in a way that doesn't just write them off as, like, a wacky old person. Like, he still talks like a young person, and he remembers the events so vividly that it feels like you can see, you can imagine what it would be like to be an old person having those memories and remembering when you were young, which I found very touching.
Yeah, it's a really striking way to illustrate the idea of death, I think, yeah, in general. Just like, okay, I've had a whole lifetime of experience watching people have their lives taken from them, arguably too soon, I guess you could say, from the perspective of someone who is, like, literally knocking on death's door.
Yeah.
And just the dichotomy between those two experiences, as a reader who is experiencing all that simultaneously, is, like, terrifying. And it just puts it at the forefront of your mind, like, right from the get-go.
Yeah.
Which I think is fascinating.
Should we tell Brendan what the deal is with Paul?
Is he God?
He's not God.
So, during the story, yeah, Paul is healed by John Coffey.
Yes. Oh, right. I know this.
You got to that?
No, I remember this.
Okay.
He's he's like 100 something, right? He's like 150 somewhere.
In the book he's 104. I think in the movie he's 108. Or
yeah,
something.
Yeah. So everyone who comes in contact with him lives a super long life, right? Like the mouse.
With John Coffey, yeah.
Yeah, or the rat, yeah, or whatever. Yeah. Yeah.
How do you know, you remember this from the movie?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But also, just to note, like, that's a strange difference in age for the book to the movie. Like, I wonder what the reasoning for adding 4 years was.
Yeah. There's all these arbitrary, like, tiny changes that they made in the movie, and it's like, why would you? I imagine it's because, so here's one theory, is the movie came out 3 years after the book, so maybe they wanted to keep his birthday the same for some reason.
Oh.
Like, he was still born in 1932, but he was, like, 3 or 4 years older.
Wait, the movie came out 3 years after the book?
Yeah.
Oh, well, that would explain the 3 to 4 year age.
It's still
difference.
A little weird. It's just a weird thing to be like, to have him say out loud in both.
Yeah.
I'm 104. I'm 108.
Is it like after he wrote the story, he's just like, oh, I'm going to tell it to someone again?
I guess the
idea technically is that they're trying to pretend that this actually took place in real life, and the person sold the rights to their movie.
That's actually a really good point.
Wrote an autobiography. It came
I'm
out.
I'm going to go with that answer.
Yeah. As Stephen King in the fiction of The Green Mile.
I will say, and this is what Stephen King tends to do, is he, like, intersperses, like, that's not the right word, but he, like, mixes real life with fiction.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So who knows? Maybe Stephen King demanded they do that in the movie so it seemed more real.
That's actually a really cool idea.
I have a list of questions to ask Stephen King about The Green Mile, so I'll ask that. I'll add that to the list.
Oh, when you talk to Stephen King.
Yeah.
Cool.
So I found a really great quote about this concept of Paul being this old person telling this story. It's actually, I was recently on a Dark Tower podcast. And then it's the Wired's Geek to the Galaxy, Geek's Guide to the Galaxy. And then I was on another episode about like horror movies. And one of the people that was on the horror movie thing is this guy, Grady Hendrix, who I had no idea when we were on the podcast together, but he has a whole series where he's rereading every Stephen King book. So I was like Googling stuff about Green Mile and found this really great thing from him, ironically. But so he has this quote that says, in the end, The Green Mile is Paul's life, one long harrowing march to the death chamber. By the time we reach the end of the book, he's begging for death, as desperate as John Coffey to be free of this fallen world. I don't know if you guys are aware of this. I think you are. But when Stephen King published this book, it was published as a serial novel. So yeah, he released one story or like one part, I guess, every month in 1996. What do you think of the decision to like, what do you think it would have been like reading the book that way?
Well, so I should say that the book didn't really hook me out until maybe the third part.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it was good and I was enjoying reading it, but there was nothing like, I didn't have the feeling of like, I need to get back and keep reading with like what the next thing is. Like, I think there was a lot of setup.
There was.
So I don't know. I don't know what it would be like reading that initially as separate pieces and having to wait in between.
I think the decision to do something like that inherently raises a lot of problems, right? Like, thank God it's good. You know what I mean? Because you said that you weren't into it until the third part. Imagine if you had been reading that as a serialized thing and you had read part one, you're like, that's fine.
I might never.
And then you're
back
out. Yeah. But because it's a one solid block of text that you can read and has been recommended to you, you put up with the first two parts, even though you don't like them. Like, I always have a problem with the serialized nature in that way, where it's like, you can spend so much time hating the thing that you're reading just to get to the good part. That happens a lot in a lot of other kinds of media. So I just think that ends up lending itself to being problematic. But I mean, he's such a good writer.
Yeah.
Generally, that's fine.
Well, and let me tell you guys what actually happened in 1996 is people fucking freaked out over this book. So he released the first one. It was under 100 pages. And every single month, so at one point when the sixth one came out, all six were simultaneously on the New York Times bestseller list at the same time.
Oh, wow.
But every month when one came out, they would immediately sell out everywhere they were available. So like most people were, it was the kind of thing where it's like everyone was waiting for the next chapter of it. And so I was reading it, thinking about that.
Yeah.
And I feel, so the way that he does it for people who haven't read it yet, like, is he'll leave you off with a cliffhanger at the end of a part and like a crazy cliffhanger. It'll be like, oh shit, suddenly someone's magic. I had no idea. And then the next part starts and then you have a really slow kind of sad chapter of Paul who he's like, okay, I just finished writing that one. I'm back in the nursing home. My hands hurt, whatever. He sort of reflects on what he's written and then he gets back into it. And one thing that I thought was really clever is I noticed that he always like redoes a part from the previous part. So he'll like, you know, it'll be like a conversation between people and he'll do it again, but it won't exactly match it.
Cool.
So it's like he's really someone remembering it, which again, I feel like it's something that's so good at.
While I was reading that, that reminded me a lot of like watching a TV show and it's like the last time on
the
Green Mile. Yeah.
It's like slightly different when they do those.
Yeah, but it's slightly different. There's a little more detail, a little more setup for what's coming next.
Yeah. Did you all read this knowing that was the case, that it had been published as six serials?
I think so.
That were added together?
Yeah. Yeah.
Because I'm wondering, for someone who has no idea that was the case, like,
might
reading
feel a
thing happen and then hearing it again for a second time, but slightly different than the first time, like almost immediately, has got to be super strange, right?
Yeah. I think it would give you pause, but I this is something that Stephen King, he's so good at making it feel like someone's real brain, like someone's really thinking. And I think if I were writing a book, like he'll call it out. He'll be like, I think I said this already, but I don't want to go back and look because I've written too much. He's like a tired old man.
Oh, that's very cool.
So it really puts you in the feeling of like, this is someone just like laboring through this long story just because he has to get this story out.
Yeah.
So I thought it was really effective. And I sort of wish I had read it as a serial, like before I was 11 when it was published. So it wasn't really the time for me, but I think that would have been cool to read it that way.
Yeah. And I mean, I just thought it was a cool way to bounce back and forth between the story in the prison and Paul in the nursing home.
Yeah. And it gave you a nice break in between like intensely crying.
Yeah.
It was like, it's cool. I'm okay. I'm still here.
Yeah.
So let's talk about real quick. So none of us have seen the movie recently, but I did want to talk about the differences between the book and the movie. So we already talked about how, I just disproved our theory from earlier. So we thought that the reason he was older is because they wanted to retain his like birth date.
Yeah.
In the movie, it takes place in 1935.
Instead of
1932.
So they also moved it up.
Yeah. So that makes no sense. And so I liked your theory better.
Yeah.
Yeah. So Stephen King, take note for
redacted,
next time.
Redacted, redacted, redacted.
Yeah. All right. So other weird differences. So in the book, it takes place in Georgia. In the movie, it takes place in Louisiana, which is another, like, why would you bother? There seems to be no reason to do that.
Yeah.
That
to me sounds like a studio screen testing thing.
Yeah, but why?
I don't know.
Just like it sounds more Southern or something.
Yeah.
Other things that are different in the movie. So I don't know if any of you guys remember this who have seen the movie. At the very beginning of the movie, The Green Mile, mm-hmm. Paul starts crying watching the movie Top Hat. And that's how he introduces the story, because in the movie, John Coffey requests to watch a movie as his like last request. And the movie he watches is Top Hat. And so the movie opens with Paul in the nursing home watching Top Hat, and he cries. And then he like opens up to Elaine about what happened. In the movie, none of that stuff happens. Or in the book. In the book, he does get upset watching a movie at the beginning, but it's a different movie and it's for a different reason. We already kind of talked about this, but one other difference is that in the book, Wild Bill sort of psychically tells John Coffey what happened. But in the movie, I think it's much more blatant than that. I think it's just like said out loud and we don't get to see all that stuff. And the last thing is, in the movie, Paul is narrating the story to Elaine instead of writing it down as a book, which I felt like was a weird... I guess it's easier that way because you're in a movie. You can like capture someone narrating something in a way that you can't really capture someone writing
something. That feels like a natural decision to make if you're adapting something to a film.
It makes sense, but it's also like, so 90% of Stephen King's books, the protagonists are writers.
Yeah.
So I feel like that was sort of an unfair change because it's like, that's so important to him that like the person is telling their story that way. Like,
yeah, true.
Just, you know, weird. And then the
maybe
other.
That's why Secret Window is bad.
There's a lot of reasons.
because Johnny Depp wasn't
a writer.
No, because he wasn't dictating the story to someone else. Yeah. He was trying to write it down.
Yeah. And then the other thing that's different. So in the movie, they leave out a lot of deaths that are sort of a big deal in the book. So in the movie, you don't hear about Paul's wife dying. You don't see Mr. Jingles die, or at least I don't think you do. You don't hear that Elaine dies. And oh, his name is Brad Dolan, the mean guy in the nursing home. But he doesn't die. Wait. He's not in the movie at all.
Huh.
That's so like a big connection.
Yeah.
Yeah. So in the movie, there's much less sort of Paul's life in the nursing home. It's just like he happens to be narrating it to someone in the nursing home. And then at the end, they walk out to the shed and that's it.
Does the movie still like explain how Paul's life is also like the Green Mile, or is it just, oh, he lives long because he was touched and that's it?
Yeah. So from what I remember, I think that towards the end there is a line from him talking about how it's like, you know, the Green Mile, like we all have a Green Mile and, or like, you know, I thought the Green Mile was there in that prison, but it's really here in this, like, I think there's some line there about it, but it's not as like spelled out.
Yeah.
But so there's no like descriptive way of showing that. Like in the book, Janice's death is a huge point to that.
Yeah. I think in the movie it's left sort of open-ended. Like you don't know how long he's going to live for. So I don't know if that was like a choice or if they just...
So how does the movie portray Paul's suffering?
I think it just talks about how everyone he loved died. So it's like you sort of know that his wife died, you know that all his friends died, but it's not like literally also Elaine died and the mouse died and all that stuff. Let's move on to the fun part. Let's talk about Stephen King connections. All right. So I read Stephen King books and I look for connections. I think, so first off, I always like to think about Stephen King books in the context of his life, because I think it's always like, we all know he was hit by a, or I assume you guys know he was hit by a car in 1999. He had a serious cocaine problem from like, I think the 70s to the 90s. And like, if you look at where The Dark Tower was written, you can see like the difference in style. So I think it's always interesting to look at where this stuff fits in. So one of the things I was thinking about is obviously Green Mile has some overlap with Shawshank Redemption. Shawshank was actually written 14 years before Green Mile. So it was not his first prison movie. And interesting, random, fun fact. So the Green Mile movie came out in 1999, which is the year he was hit by the car. So it's also, keep this in mind for a second from now when I say something, but he was hit by a car on June 19th, which is why the number 19 is so important in the Dark Tower books and in... there's some 19 references in this book.
I feel like 19 was important even in the, not maybe not as much as later books, but even in the earlier books. Like it's even in the first book.
Yeah.
Unless that was added in later.
So this is what's crazy is, so from his very early books, he's always been talking about 19. But after he got hit by the car on the 19th, he went crazy with the number 19. So it was like, yeah. So if you look at his later books, it's like, way more obvious. Whereas if you look in like the first couple Dark Tower books, it's like, okay, 19 is his lucky number, whatever. But then it gets really weird.
Interesting.
Speaking of 19, this was written 19 years after The Shining, which is relevant because John Coffey clearly has The Shining.
Yeah, or The Shine, according to the shitty Dark Tower movie.
Or The Touch in the actual Dark Tower books.
Right.
However you want to call it. And yeah. And one other fun fact is, so in 1999, Stephen, or 96, Stephen King came out with 8 books. 6 of them were the Green Mile novels, and 2 of them were another couple books that went together, which were The Regulators and Desperation. So that year he had like this series of books that were all like connected to each other.
The Regulators, is that a reference to The Lowman?
I don't remember. Probably. I want to say yes.
I feel like there's something with Regulators having to do with the Dark Tower.
I think you're right. So I've actually only read Desperation, but the thing about those 2 books is that they're like, they're twin books. So it's like, it's the same story told from 2 different perspectives.
Oh, interesting.
It's very cool. All right. So, connections. So there's 1:19 reference in the movie. In most Stephen King books, there are like 4 or 5 19. So it's like, I really had to dig for connections in this book, but when Mr. Jingles leaves the mile, Brutal takes out the visitor's log and he writes down that the mouse came and visited them on the mile. Someone asks what he's doing and he says, I'm responding or I'm obeying regulation 19, which is that every visitor to E Block shall show a yellow administration pass and shall be recorded without fail. There is a reference to the territories, which, if you've read The Talisman, one of my favorite Stephen King books, Jack Sawyer goes to the territories. That's like the alternate universe where he goes to save his mom. And when they get out of, after they save Melinda or whatever her name is, Paul talks about how John Coffey, like he expects him to be gone because they left him alone for a little bit. And he says, I expected that he would have lit out for the territories, which is a reference for like sort of going to nowhere. The white. So this was a good one. At various points, I think there's a couple points he says this, but at one point he says, when John stepped forward, it was that other spirit, something white. That's how I think of it, as something white, which took control of the situation. And Stephen King usually uses the white as a force of good.
Yeah. So throughout like the Dark Tower, it's usually the side of white is gone, which is like God in the Stephen King universe. Right. And then versus the outside darkness, I think it's called, or the outside dark.
Yeah. So those are the ones I noticed that I think are real. I Googled and found a bunch of connections that seem really tenuous. So one is there's a short story called The Little Sisters of Aluria where there's these nurses who heal people with it turns out they're maybe like vampires or something. But one of them who is the good one uses insects to heal her patients. And John Coffey does that too, which is cool.
Interesting.
This one I was going to ask you about, Pat. So I found this crazy thing on a forum that said, that the connection that she found in the Green Mile was to the Dark Tower, because apparently they talk about how things are in the southeast or the northeast of things. Does that mean anything to you?
Not really. When I read your notes on this, I felt like they're grasping at straws here.
Yeah.
I
don't remember anything in the dark. Like, so I know that there's like directions.
That's such a minor thing. Like, it's referencing when he gets to the beach after the first book and the man in black goes one way and he goes the other way.
Is it southeast and northeast?
I don't remember.
Right.
But I think that's what they're referencing, and that's just such a minor thing.
Yeah.
It sounds like it could just be like a writer's quirk, right?
Right.
Yeah. I do think, so in the Dark Tower, like directions are important in that there's like this, what do you call it? Like a wheel that's facing like different directions.
Right.
But I don't remember southeast being particularly important.
Yeah, I don't either.
Okay.
Because the Dark Tower has the beams, right?
And
the
beams are in a circle. And each one, right. And if you like follow the clouds, it like goes in a direction.
Mm-hmm.
So with the white color, I guess when the insects sort of disappear, they like turn white first. I guess that's the same deal.
I think so. Yeah. So I think it's like, right, he's like taking the pain in. He's like getting it out of him as insects, and then it turns into something good.
Right, or it's whatever magic is in him is cleansing that disease, which I guess it's symbolized as pestilence, right?
Yeah. And then the last one that I came across, which again seems sort of not real, is a lot of people were comparing John Coffey and Roland from the Dark Tower in that there's a strong moral dilemma, right? Like you want to be the good guy, but you don't know what to do. You're cursed with an unnaturally long life, which both of them certainly are. And you're punished by like these forces of good for trying to do the right thing.
I think that last one is the only thing that I would say they really have in common. It's both, they both kind of have this cosmic horror sense to it. I think of like they're on the side of good and there's some type of force helping them, but it's to its own end, not for their benefit, but for whatever this force is.
Right.
And they don't really have any control over it.
And they're like,
but casualties. Other than that, I think they're, I would say that's the only thing that really connects those two characters.
I did not think of Roland a single time while I was reading the remo.
I didn't either. So.
All right. And the last one, Chris, this is for you. Apparently there's an episode of The Simpsons called The Frying Game from 2002 where Homer meets someone named John Coffey on death row. Do you remember that?
It sounds like I remember, but that might just be the power suggestion. I don't know.
Will you go watch that episode and tell me?
I'm pretty sure it's just going to be like one sight gag and people. It probably came out like right after the Green Miles.
I think so too. It's also weird that the episode is called The Frying Game because that makes me think it's about the crying game and not Green Mile.
Well, there's a lot of frying going on in Green Mile too.
That's true.
Oh shit.
Maybe there's a mix. Yeah. Maybe we should watch that episode.
We probably should.
Can I rewind the clock a little bit and ask a question?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. The Shawshank Redemption.
Yes.
Do you think that there is any specific reason that he decided to revisit the idea of inmates in a prison? Besides the fact that, like, just like an interesting place to have a story take place.
I think it's just that the hopelessness of prison gives you like a specific playground for how people are feeling. And how one thing that he says a lot in the Green Mile is that like when they'll act out on the Green Mile and he's like, why not? You can only get fried once, right? Yeah. So like, even if you kill someone, it's not going to change what happens.
Yeah.
And I think Shawshank was sort of similar where it's like everyone there was doomed regardless of what they did.
Yeah.
And I think that he tends to gravitate towards situations that are like, you are a good person in a bad place. And so bad things happen to you.
Yeah. To me, they seem like thematically the inverse of one another.
Yeah.
Like this could literally be an answer to the Shawshank Redemption in a way.
Go on.
That's as far as I thought.
How could an answer to what?
Well, I just, when I think of the Shawshank Redemption, I think of just an enduring spirit, atoning for your own sins, and the acceptance, I guess, of bliss in a way that most people don't generally tend to accept their own happiness, I think, in a lot of cases. And the Green Mile seems like just dire, you know, even though there are these like magical, beautiful things happening. It just seems so fucking upsetting.
I do kind of agree with you, though, because it's like it's kind of flipped because in Shawshank, it's like there's these horrible things that happen in prison. But then you get out at the end and it's like you can end up on a beach.
Exactly.
I mean, it doesn't end up well for everyone. But it's like in the Green Mile, because of what their destiny is, they're seeing all this beautiful stuff.
Yeah.
And in Shawshank, it's like, you know, you have 20 years left. So you're like seeing how horrible everything is.
Yeah. They seem like the inverse of one another.
Yeah. All right. I'm drunk. I've had a lot of wine.
Cool.
Let's wrap up. So final thoughts. I think The Green Mile is good.
Oh, shit.
And my next episode will be about it.
That's cool. Have you read it?
Yes.
All right. Looking forward to it. I guess my final thoughts are I want to read more Stephen King.
Mm-hmm.
So far, the two stories I've read have been excellent.
Yeah.
I guess I have to watch the Simpsons episode, Frank. And I think I'd like to read more Stephen King, too. Is Shawshank Redemption a short story or like a full book?
It's a short story.
Yeah, I guess I could check that out. I definitely wasn't thrilled with the end of The Green Mile for some reason. I felt like... comparing a little bit to 11/22/63, it's kind of like
11/22/63 had an amazing ending.
It did, but it kind of felt like maybe this is just a Stephen King thing, but like the ending seemed to come in like waves or layers. Like it seems like the story could end and then there's like this extra epilogue and then an epilogue to the epilogue, and I don't know, it seemed like the arc that ended before maybe going to the shed and stuff. I kind of enjoyed that. It felt like there was more closure to that, and then the thing with the accident, I don't know. I didn't really enjoy it that much, but I definitely enjoyed the book and really liked it.
It's like a nice ending and then one more heartbreak.
Like Dark Tower.
Yeah.
So I didn't read the book, but it sounds like it was fucking great. I'm glad that I was part of this conversation, even though I didn't read the book. I got a lot out of it. I hope you guys did too. Everyone listening there at home, dear listeners. I'd love to come back for a thing that I do take part in. Maybe if you talk about It the movie or other movies or other things that aren't books, I would love to be back.
Unfortunately, he writes books, so
okay.
I'll see what I can do.
Or I can start a spinoff podcast about Stephen King's son, and I can talk about horns.
We can talk about horns.
Cool.
Well, the movie. Did you read the book?
Nope. Watch the movie.
Okay. Anyway, Pat or anyone else looking to read more Stephen King books, I would super recommend It. That's one of my favorites. And if you want another one that's sort of sappy like this one, Lisey's Story is really good and very underrated. They're all good.
Christine. Love Christine.
Goodbye.
Speaking of connections, no killer car in the Green Mile, as far as I know.
You will find the Dairy Connection, and we can party like it's 6/1999.